Welcome back to the Crypto Daily, everyone. Today we have Ethan Blockchainridge joining us, a seasoned blockchain analyst with a keen eye for emerging trends. Ethan, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Sophia. Always a pleasure to dive into the latest happenings in the cryptoverse.
Absolutely. Now let's start with Ronin's big announcement. They're partnering with Chainlink to integrate the Cross-Chain Interoperability Protocol, or CCIP, for their cross-chain bridge. Big move, especially after last year's hack, right?
Definitely a significant step towards rebuilding trust and fortifying security. The Ronin Bridge hack was a stark reminder of the vulnerabilities in cross-chain solutions. By opting for Chainlink's CCIP, which boasts decentralized Oracle networks for message validation, Ronin is signaling a strong commitment to robust security.
And it seems they're going all in, making CCIP their canonical cross-chain infrastructure. What's the strategic thinking there in your view?
It's about streamlining their cross-chain operations while prioritizing a battle-tested solution. Chainlink's CCIP is already a backbone for major DeFi platforms, so Ronin is tapping into an established and reliable framework. This not only enhances security, but also improves user experience and frees up resources for Ronin to focus on broader adoption.
Interesting. So while Ronin is bolstering its bridge, Uniswap, the DEX giant, is taking the plunge into Layer 2 with its own network, Unichain. Tell us more about that.
It's a bold move that highlights the growing importance of Layer 2 solutions in the Ethereum ecosystem. Unichain, built on Optimism's OP stack, aims to tackle the speed and cost issues that have plagued Ethereum. By promising faster transactions and enhanced liquidity across chains, Uniswap is essentially creating its own highway for DeFi.
Now, Ethan, let's dive into some market trends. We've seen some interesting data on trading volumes. Binance, the world's largest crypto exchange, saw a significant dip in September, and they weren't alone. What's your take on this slowdown?
It's definitely noteworthy, Sophia. The decline in trading volume across major exchanges like Binance, OKX, and Coinbase, while Bitcoin's price remained relatively stable, is unusual. Several factors could be at play here. Geopolitical tensions, the upcoming U.S. elections, and the Fed's monetary policies are creating uncertainty in the market, leading investors to take a wait-and-see approach.
And yet, amidst this, we see Crypto.com bucking the trend, with their market share soaring. What's behind their surge?
Crypto.com's success seems to be driven by a combination of factors. They've been aggressively onboarding institutional clients, attracting more retail investors, and offering a wider range of trading pairs. It's a good reminder that while the overall market might be experiencing a dip, there are always winners and losers.
That's a great point. Now, speaking of winners, a recent Schwab survey revealed that cryptocurrencies are now the second most sought-after asset class among ETF investors, surpassing even fixed income. What are your thoughts on this shift in investor sentiment?
It's a testament to the growing mainstream acceptance of crypto, Sophia. Investors, particularly millennials, are increasingly seeing crypto as a viable investment option. The success of recent Bitcoin ETF launches, with billions flowing in, further solidifies this trend. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the long run, especially with potential regulatory changes on the horizon.
Absolutely. And speaking of regulations, the SEC has been quite active, recently suing major crypto market maker Cumberland DRW. How do you see this regulatory landscape impacting the crypto market's growth?
The SEC's actions highlight the growing pains of a nascent industry. While some see it as stifling innovation, I believe regulatory clarity is crucial for long-term growth. It's a balancing act, and hopefully we'll see more nuanced regulations that protect investors without hindering innovation.
Indeed. Now let's talk about Bitcoin's price action. It recently dipped below $59,000, breaking its September rally. What's your outlook on Bitcoin's price in the coming months, especially with the U.S. election looming?
The next few months will be crucial for Bitcoin. The outcome of the U.S. election, coupled with the Fed's interest rate decisions and global macroeconomic factors, will likely drive its price action. While some analysts are predicting a year-end rally fueled by historical trends and potential positive news, others are more cautious, pointing to the current regulatory uncertainty and the possibility of further market corrections.
Now, Ethan, let's dive into some stories that highlight both the risks and evolving regulatory landscape of the crypto world. First up, we have the Plus Token Ponzi scheme resurfacing. Remember that one? Billions were lost, and now it seems a significant chunk of the stolen ether is on the move again.
Right. The Plus Token saga. It's a stark reminder that while blockchain technology itself might be transparent, the humans behind it, not so much. The fact that this much ETH from a scam busted years ago is still being shuffled around is concerning. It speaks to the challenges in recouping stolen crypto and the lengths these criminals go to launder their gains.
Exactly. And the potential market impact is significant. We're talking about $1.3 billion worth of Ether that could be dumped on the market. That's not going to move the needle for Bitcoin like it used to, but it's still enough to cause serious price volatility, especially for altcoins.
Absolutely. And speaking of bad actors, we've got the self-proclaimed crypto king arrested in the Philippines. This story is almost comical if it weren't for the millions lost by victims who fell for his promises of unrealistic returns. It highlights the importance of due diligence, especially in an industry that's still finding its regulatory footing.
It's a classic case of, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But what's interesting here is how this crypto king targeted high-profile individuals, even government employees. It suggests a certain level of sophistication and premeditation that's alarming.
Indeed, and it underscores the need for better investor education and stronger regulatory frameworks globally. We need to empower individuals to make informed decisions and hold these scammers accountable.
Couldn't agree more. Now, shifting gears to the regulatory landscape, we've got some interesting developments in South Korea. Upbit's dominance in the market has sparked concerns about a potential bank run at its banking partner, KBank.
That's a precarious situation. The concentration of power within the South Korean crypto market is quite high. If something were to happen to Upbit, it could trigger a domino effect, impacting not just KBank, but the broader South Korean crypto ecosystem. It's a systemic risk that regulators need to address.
And it's not just a local issue either. Remember, South Korea plays a significant role in the global crypto market. A bank run there could have ripple effects across the world. It'll be interesting to see how the FSC addresses these concerns.
Definitely. And speaking of regulations, Hong Kong is stepping up its game, with more crypto exchange licenses expected by year-end. This is a positive sign, showing that Hong Kong is serious about becoming a crypto hub while implementing safeguards. The contrast with mainland China's stance on crypto is stark.
It'll be interesting to see how this regulatory divergence between Hong Kong and mainland China plays out in the long run. Will Hong Kong become a crypto gateway for Chinese investors? Only time will tell. Finally, let's talk about the FBI's rather unorthodox approach to catching crypto scammers. They created their own token.
Operation Token Mirrors. It's a fascinating case study. The FBI going undercover, creating a honeypot token to lure in pump-and-dump scammers. It's like something out of a movie, and it raises some ethical questions. But it also highlights the lengths law enforcement agencies are willing to go to combat crypto crime.
It's a bold move, and it'll be interesting to see if this sets a precedent for future investigations. It's a clear message that authorities are not afraid to innovate and adapt their tactics to stay ahead of criminals in the crypto space.
Absolutely. And let's not forget Zach XBT's expose on Murad Mahmudov's alleged meme coin holdings. This story really divided the crypto community. Some applauded the transparency, while others criticized it as an invasion of privacy. It raises important questions about accountability and transparency, especially for influential figures in the crypto space.
It's a complex issue with no easy answers, but it certainly highlights the power of on-chain analysis and the ongoing debate about privacy versus transparency in the world of crypto. And finally, we have Mango Labs suing members of its own DAO for an alleged $10 million embezzlement scheme. This case is particularly noteworthy because it involves alleged wrongdoings by individuals entrusted with governance rights within a DAO.
It's a stark reminder that even in the decentralized world of DAOs, we're still dealing with human nature, and unfortunately, human greed. This case will likely have significant implications for the future of DAO governance and the legal frameworks surrounding decentralized organizations.
Well, Ethan, it seems like everyone's jumping on the tokenization bandwagon these days. We've got Trump's crypto project integrating with Aave, Athena pouring millions into tokenized RBUAs, and Rexus Finance selling out its pre-sale with its real estate tokenization platform. What's your take on this sudden surge in tokenization projects?
It's definitely a sign of the times, Sophia. Tokenization has been bubbling under the surface for a while now, and it seems like it's finally having its moment. The potential is huge, right? We're talking about unlocking liquidity for traditionally illiquid assets, from real estate to fine art to commodities. And with DeFi platforms like Aave getting involved, it's becoming easier than ever to put these tokenized assets to work.
Right, and we see that with Athena leveraging its treasury for yield through these tokenized RWAs. It's like the institutional adoption of DeFi is happening right before our eyes. But let's talk about Trump's project for a second. It's interesting that they're choosing Aave for governance and aiming for an Ethereum layer 2 like Scroll. What do you make of that decision?
It's a savvy move, in my opinion. Aave is one of the most established and respected DeFi protocols out there. By building on Aave and tapping into its governance system, Trump's project gains instant credibility. And opting for a layer 2 solution like Scroll makes sense from a scalability and cost perspective. It shows they're at least thinking about the long-term viability of the platform.
Though, we have to acknowledge the elephant in the room. Doe Finance, which the WLFI white paper cited as inspiration, recently suffered a multi-million dollar exploit. Does that raise any red flags for you?
It's definitely a concern, Sophia. And it highlights the inherent risks involved in DeFi. Smart contracts can be vulnerable, and even experienced teams can make mistakes. Investors need to do their due diligence and understand the risks before jumping into any project, especially one associated with a figure as polarizing as Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And speaking of risks, Rexus Finance's focus on real estate tokenization is exciting, but it's also a sector ripe for regulation. How do you see that playing out?
Regulation is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's something that Rexus Finance and any other project in this space will need to address head-on. Clear regulatory frameworks will be crucial for wider adoption. But if they can navigate that successfully, the potential upside is enormous. Imagine a world where you can invest in a fraction of a Manhattan skyscraper with a few clicks on your phone. That's the promise of tokenization.
It's a brave new world of tokenized assets, that's for sure. And it seems like we're just at the tip of the iceberg. It's interesting to see these meme coins like Pepe Unchained, and even established ones like Shiba Inu, incorporating Layer 2 solutions. It seems like the meme coin space is trying to mature beyond just hype and speculation.
Definitely. The success of Dogecoin and Shiba Inu proved that meme coins have staying power. But to achieve any kind of long-term value, they need to offer more than just a cute dog or frog. Layer 2 solutions, with their promise of faster and cheaper transactions, could be a game changer. It makes the whole ecosystem more usable for everyday transactions.
Right, because let's be honest, nobody wants to pay a hefty gas fee just to buy a meme-themed coffee mug.
Exactly, and that's where projects like Pepe Unchained come in. By building on a layer 2, they can tap into the existing community and brand recognition of Pepe the Frog, while also addressing the technical limitations that have plagued meme coins in the past.
It's a clever strategy. And with the involvement of influential figures like 99 Bitcoins and Claybro, Pepe Unchained seems to be generating significant buzz. But the question is, can it live up to the hype? The meme coin space is notoriously volatile.
Absolutely. Volatility is part and parcel of the meme coin game. But I think the fact that Pepe Unchained has already raised millions in its pre-sale and has a rapidly growing community suggests there's real interest in what they're building. Whether it's enough to sustain long-term growth, only time will tell.
And what about Caspa? It seems to be struggling despite being a favorite among strategic investors. Do you think projects like Pepe Unchained and Memebet pose a real threat?
Caspa's recent performance is definitely a point of concern for its holders. While it has strong fundamentals and a dedicated community, the lack of listings on major exchanges and diminishing mining rewards are holding it back. projects like Pepe Unchained and Mimibet, with their focus on innovation and community engagement, could capitalize on this and attract investors looking for the next big thing.
So it's a classic case of established players facing stiff competition from agile newcomers. It'll be fascinating to see how this battle for meme coin dominance plays out. Speaking of intriguing legal precedents, a recent development in South Korea caught my eye. It appears they're now allowing the division of cryptocurrency in divorce settlements. Ethan, what are your thoughts on this?
It's certainly a sign of the times, Sophia. Cryptocurrency is becoming increasingly mainstream, and it's only natural that legal systems would need to adapt to accommodate it. South Korea recognizing it as an intangible asset in divorce proceedings sets an interesting precedent.
Absolutely. And it makes sense considering how integral crypto has become to many people's financial portfolios. But I imagine valuing and dividing these assets can be quite complex, especially given the volatility we often see in the crypto market.
Indeed. Unlike traditional assets like real estate or stocks, cryptocurrency can be incredibly volatile. Its value can fluctuate dramatically in a short period, which could lead to disputes over its worth during a divorce. It also brings up questions of how to fairly divide assets that might be stored in different ways, like on exchanges or in cold wallets.
That's a great point. And what about hidden crypto holdings? We've seen cases like the one in New York, where a wife discovered her husband had undisclosed Bitcoin. Do you think this will become more common as crypto adoption grows?
It's definitely a possibility. The inherent pseudo-anonymity of crypto transactions can make it tempting for individuals to try and conceal assets during a divorce. However, as we've seen in that New York case, blockchain analysis can be a powerful tool for uncovering hidden holdings. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in future cases.
But Ethan, shifting gears a bit, let's delve into the fascinating world of venture capital, particularly through the lens of Sequoia Capital. This firm has become synonymous with Silicon Valley's success, but as we learned from the documentary, it's not without its challenges and transformations.
Absolutely, Sophia. Sequoia's story is really a microcosm of the VC industry as a whole. It highlights the incredible highs, like their early bets on companies like Apple and Google, but also the inevitable bumps in the road, such as the FTX debacle.
Right? And what struck me was how the documentary portrayed this almost mythical aura around Sequoia, the sense that they could do no wrong. But then you have these high-profile missteps, the internal conflicts, and the changing landscape of the industry itself. It paints a picture of a firm grappling with its own legacy while trying to stay ahead of the curve.
Exactly. And I think that's a tension many established players in any industry face, especially one as dynamic as tech. Sequoia's decision to split its global operations, particularly separating from its Chinese arm, speaks volumes about the geopolitical realities and the need for adaptability.
It's interesting how they frame that decision as a strategic one, not just a reaction to external pressures. They're essentially acknowledging that what worked in the past might not be the recipe for future success. And this new generation of leadership at Sequoia seems to be putting their own stamp on things, for better or worse.
Definitely. The Klarna incident, with the boardroom clash involving Michael Moritz, really brought that generational divide into focus. It'll be interesting to see how Roelof Botha, the current managing partner, navigates these waters and what his vision for Sequoia's future entails.
And of course, we can't talk about Sequoia without addressing their massive bet on Elon Musk and Twitter. That's a whole other conversation about the cult of personality in tech and the risks associated with such concentrated investments.
For sure. It seems like a classic case of betting on the jockey and not just the horse. Only time will tell if Musk can turn Twitter around and make it the profitable behemoth he envisions. If not, it'll be a costly lesson for Sequoia and its investors.
Speaking of investors, the documentary also touched upon the changing dynamics of the VC landscape itself. The influx of new players, the rise of mega funds like SoftBank, and the increased competition are putting pressure on traditional firms like Sequoia.
It's a double-edged sword. On one hand, more capital flowing into the tech ecosystem can fuel innovation and create opportunities. But it also leads to inflated valuations, a greater emphasis on growth over profitability, and potentially unsustainable bubbles, as we've seen recently.
And that's where the importance of due diligence and a discerning eye for investment comes in, something Sequoia has prided itself on, but also stumbled with in cases like FTX.
Absolutely. The FTX collapse was a stark reminder that even the most seasoned investors can fall prey to hype and misplaced trust. It'll be crucial for Sequoia and other VC firms to learn from these mistakes and adapt their strategies as the industry continues to evolve.
And finally, let's talk about a fascinating intersection of Web3 and personal well-being. Ethan, what are your thoughts on platforms like VeChain and Puffpaw using blockchain technology to promote healthier lifestyles?
It's a really intriguing concept, Sophia. We often hear about the potential of blockchain to revolutionize finance and supply chains, but its application in health and sustainability is equally compelling. The idea of tokenizing positive actions, like choosing sustainable options or reducing nicotine intake, could be a game changer in terms of behavioral change.
Exactly. It's like gamifying healthy choices, making them not just good for you, but also financially rewarding. Do you think this approach can be truly effective in the long run, though? Is the incentive enough to drive lasting change?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The success of these platforms hinges on their ability to create a sustainable ecosystem where the incentives are aligned with genuine user engagement and long-term behavioral shifts. It's not just about earning tokens. It's about fostering a sense of community and shared purpose.
And that's where the real challenge lies, right? Finding that sweet spot between incentivization and intrinsic motivation. It'll be interesting to see how these projects navigate that balance as they evolve. Overall, a fascinating exploration of how Web3 can be leveraged for social good. Thank you for joining me today, Ethan. It's been a pleasure picking your brain on all things crypto and beyond.
The pleasure was all mine, Sophia. Always great to chat with a fellow enthusiast.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Crypto Daily. We explored the power of storytelling in crypto, delved into the evolving landscape of venture capital, and even touched upon the potential of Web3 to incentivize healthier choices. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring the ever-evolving world of blockchain and beyond. This is Sophia Satoshi View, signing off.